Everybody grab the Heavenly Highway Hymns, the Blue Book as we call it. Appreciate each one coming here today. Thankful for the visitors. We appreciate you coming to worship with us today. Hope you have a good day in the Lord here with the service and the preaching, if the Lord leads that way, and it'll be announced, but there'll be a business meeting right after the service. But anyway, let's concentrate now on serving the Lord. Start with number 17. Number 17. Y'all are sounding good. I'm going to get us a bus and go on the road with us. Number seven. Try number seven.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Sam. Thank you, Miss Carolyn, for the good plan. Good morning, everybody. It's good to see everybody out today. Last song, what a meeting in the air. I guess one of the questions I would ask would be, what would be your favorite meeting of someone that you knew here on this earth? Just think back to something that you thought was really a grand meeting. I guess I would kind of go back to when we were down in Florida, and probably the first time that we came back. That was a joyful time for us just to get to come back like that and seeing Mother like that. And it was joyful for me, and I know it was for Paula and the kids. But they was glad to meet their friends. Now, what I'm getting at with that song is there's coming a day when we'll get to meet again. I haven't seen my mother in better than 20 years, I guess almost 25 years now, my father in almost 30 years. And it'll be a joyful meeting to get to see them again. Some of you have been a lot longer than that. Maybe you've had loved ones that you haven't seen in a long time, and you look forward to seeing them, right? It'll be a great big meeting. But the meeting that we're talking about in that song is when all the brothers and sisters of God come back with the Lord, and we pick up the body. You know, that glorified body? Not this one that hurts and pains and worries and does this and that throughout our life. We're going to pick up that glorified body wherein we'll never die, never again. And that's going to be a great big meeting right there. I think it's going to be a great time as far as what we would say is seeing the brothers and sisters, seeing the saints and everything, but the meeting of that body of that God has prepared for us and our soul, that boy, that's going to be a wonderful time. It's going to be a glorious time for each and every one of us. And I hope we're all looking forward to that. If you don't know that you're prepared to meet the Lord in the air today, I hope today is the day you get ready to meet Him. Because I believe He's coming back. A lot of people may kind of have a different opinion about it. They'll say, well, I don't think He's coming back. The Bible tells us there'll be scoffers that will come along. And what that means, that'll be people that will doubt. They'll be making fun of it. They'll say, well, he hasn't come back yet, so He's probably not. You know, every so often you'll hear somebody to make a prediction, and they'll say the Lord's coming back at this particular time. You know what I think that is? That's the devil. And what the devil's doing, he's trying to get us to settle back on our seats and think, well, He's not come back yet. Well, they missed that one. That's what the Bible said. There'd be people come along and they'd say, He's not coming back. But He is. And the main thing is, the most important thing is to be ready to meet Him in the air. It's a wonderful thought for me. I look forward to that day to getting to meet the Lord. If I'm here, if I'm still here upon this earth, when He comes, that's going to be a joyful time for me to watch all the saints going that's come out of the graves. That's going to be joyful to me. But I'm going to be looking at Jesus too. I'm going to be looking at Him and seeing Him coming. And boy, that's going to be happy. I'm going to be happy in that very moment and that time. It's good to be here today. I hope everybody's had a good week. I hope you've had things that have blessed you in great ways, especially in spiritual manners. I hope you've got a good spiritual blessing this week. And so if you didn't, let's look for one today is what I want you to do. It's good to be in the house of the Lord today. We're going to move right along with our service today. I'm going to call the kids down to this side. We'll do our children's church right over here today. Come on, kids. I need some help. Come on, kids. Come right on up here. Where's Cohen? Not coming today? Okay. All right. Good to see all of you up here today. Thank you for coming. I appreciate your coming up to talk with me. You know, I've been talking about people that were young. I'm going to talk to you about a man that he started his service for the Lord a lot younger than y'all did, than y'all are. And what I mean is that his mother, she had a hard time having a baby. And she prayed to God, give me a child. Just give me one. She kept praying. No, there was some people around her that was saying they made fun of her because she couldn't have a child. That's bad, isn't it? But what she did, she just kept praying. She went to the place to pray, and she got so strong in the spirit that she said, Lord, if you'll just give me a man child. And she said a man child. She wanted a boy. And she said, if you'll just give me a man child, I'll give him back to you. Now that sounds pretty big promise, doesn't it? But she wanted a child so bad, she said, Lord, if you'll give me that child, I'll give him right back to you. Well, when he was born, the Lord gave her a child. And when he was born, she took care of him up until a certain time when he was weaned and big enough to go to the tabernacle where the priest was. And she gave him to the Lord there. And he stayed there with the priest. And what he did, he helped them. He helped at the temple walls, at the work and doing everything. But then, as a boy, one night, God spoke to him. And then he called him out by name. This man's name was Samuel. And he laid down on his bed, and the Lord said, Samuel, Samuel. And like he thought it was just like I was talking to you. I don't know if it was or not. He felt like it was. There's been times that God spoke to me, and it almost seemed like it was so clear that it was just like you was talking to me. But he ran into the master there, and he said, sir, here I am. He said, you call me. He said, I didn't call you, boy. He said, go back to bed. A little while, the Lord spoke to Samuel again. He said, he ran back to the master again. He said, here I am. What'd you need? And he said, I didn't call you. But he put kind of the master of the tabernacle, he said, next time you hear that, you say, Lord, here am I. Say on. You see, what I'm trying to tell you, you're never too young to listen to God's voice. And when he calls, it's important for you to answer. Just say, here I am, Lord. What do you need? For some of you that are not saved yet, there's going to come a time he's going to knock on your heart and he's going to call you by name and he's going to tell you, you come to me. You may not recognize it on the start, but there'll come a time you'll figure out who it is and you go to him. Now what Samuel did, he went back and he laid down again and the Lord called again. And the Lord had a great big message for him. He called him to go out and to preach and prophesy is what he did. I don't wish that on any of y'all, but I will say this. Always be willing to follow the Lord. Sometimes just saying, Lord, here I am. What do you need? Is a good thing for all of you to do. I'll hush with that. I'll let you go. Bye-bye. Thankful for our young ones that comes up. is always a good message for them, but I hope it's always a good message for those that are listening also. I hope and pray that we'll all follow the Lord today in this service and be like Samuel. Here am I, Lord. What do you got to say to me, Lord? I'm listening, Lord. Let's all listen to the Lord today. It's good to see everybody here today. We're going to be going to the Lord in prayer here in just a few minutes. Does anybody have a prayer request before we go any further in the service? Let's be prayerful one for another. There was several prayer requests during our Sunday school this morning. Please remember them. The Lord knows who they are. And so let's remember them. We still have those that are shut in. We need to be prayerful for them. I did talk with Sister Linda about Brother Sonny this week and herself also. I'll ask you to remember her. Let's continue to remember them in our prayers as they're suffering with the age disease, I guess you would call it. And let's be prayerful for them. Does anybody else have a prayer request on your heart this morning? Good to see each and every one here today. We're going to call on one to start our prayer, but we want everybody to pray today in your own way. I believe that the Lord hears every one of us at one time. He can hear every one of us distinctly. So you talk to God. Talk to Him about this service. Ask the Lord to be in our midst today and ask Him to give us a good blessing today is what I hope you will do. Ask prayer. You pray for those that are unsaved today. We've got them in our midst that needs to get saved. So let's be praying for them today. We'll call on one to start our prayer, but we want everybody to pray today. Brother Tom, would you lead us in prayer, please?
Continue our song service. Appreciate your attention to the collection matter, but let's continue singing. Number 91. Number 91.
Thank you.
All right, let's go back a few pages, number 47. He is coming back. Let there be no doubt. Brother Ricky talked about a while ago that we'll have a glorified body. You know, you've had two knee replacements in the last couple of years. You're going to get them replaced again. You get your new ones back. That'll be a good day. Yeah. Let's sing a couple of verses of 284. 284. All right, brother.
Thank you, Brother Sam. Thank you for the good songs this morning, Brother Sam. Thank you for the good playing, Sister Carolyn. Good morning, everybody. It's good to see each and every one with us today. If you're visiting with us, we thank you for being here today, and I hope you'll be blessed to be here today. Does anybody have a word of testimony or anything on your heart this morning? It's good for us to be in the house of the Lord today, and I pray that we'll all do as the Lord would lead us to do in this service today. Our message today, I'm just going to go ahead and get started, is going to come from the sixth chapter of the book of Proverbs. The sixth chapter of the book of Proverbs. We're just going to start out by reading one verse today, and then we're going to go through some different points. And you might have noticed a piece of paper up here. I've got my definitions ready for you today. They're coming out of Webster's Dictionary, the 1611. And, no, not 1611, 1826, excuse me. I got the wrong book in mind right there. So, but it's my definitions are coming from there today out of Webster's Dictionary. We're going to start our reading lesson today with verse 16. And we're going to stop with that one verse. And it says, "These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him." As you might guess, our message today is going to be the six things that God hates. When you look at the word hate there, I've thought about it a little bit over the last few days. Hate is a word that we've been taught over the last several years not to use it unless it's something very drastic. And they have what they, the government calls hate speech. We've got hate crimes. We've got things like that. But hate is a word that basically is what it really means is to be something that is disliked completely. Disliked completely. And what I want to look at today as we look at these six things that God hates is what God hates spiritually. Most of the time, and I think I preached this before, as it being the physical things of hatred, the things that God hates, but we're going to look at the spiritual things that God hates today by these six things here. The very first one you'll find in verse 17 is a proud look. And I want you to pray for me today that I can bring this message out in a way that it'll touch our hearts today. But I'll say especially to those that are not saved today, I want it to touch them. I want them to see that they are not sinless. As I've told you before, I thought I was a pretty good boy before that I got saved, and I really thought God would save me just because of that. I believe that. But God's not going to save us because that we're a pretty good boy or a pretty good girl. Not even a good old boy or a good old girl, as they call them now, I think. But I want us to realize the reason why God is going to save an individual is because that we are a sinner and that we need mercy. That we need to, when we have put our faith in Him and turned from our wickedness toward God, that He will truly save us. But the idea that I want to bring out today is that the very fact is that we are all sinners. Every one of us have sinned in our lives. Every one of us in our lifetime needed to be saved. And when it comes down to these six points today, I want you to start out with the very first one, and that is proud. A proud look. Being proud, according to Webster, is having or displaying an excessive self-esteem or worth. Now, as I said earlier today, excuse me, I've got some water under here. As I said earlier today, I felt like I was not really all that bad. But the fact of the matter is, we're all sinners. But when we get to a place that we start to think of ourselves in a fashion where that we seem to think of ourselves better than what we actually are, we get to believing that we are that better thing. And as sinners, we get to a place where we start to think that we are not really that bad. We're not that sinner. So what do you do about the effect of pride today in our lives? One of the hardest things to do is to turn away from that pride, that notion that we have in our minds that we're not that bad. We are to realize that God hates that pride, that idea that we are better than what we think we are, that we are going to be something that is, God is going to pay homage to, you might say, or even respect us because that we are good looking, or maybe because we behave at certain times, or maybe it's because that we have a certain talent that we have. Now, what James says in the fourth chapter of the book of James, you'll find this in the sixth verse, and you've heard this verse quoted and read many times, but he says, "But God giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud." So when that we have the idea in our minds that we are thinking well about ourselves, we get to a place that we need to turn away from that pride, because God is going to resist that pride. He's going to turn away from that proud look. I can remember, and I think I've said this before here, the day before that I got saved, I had been seeking the Lord on the altar, and a little boy, probably almost half my size, walked up to me and he said, "You was crying up there, wasn't you?" Well, my pride got the best of me at that moment in time, and I said, "No, I wasn't. I wasn't crying. I had been seeking God, and I had been weeping out of sorrow in that day. But my pride got the best of me in that moment. I'd been taught not to cry, not to weep in that way. And I thought that little boy was putting me down in that way. So my pride slipped back up on me. So the next night when I was seeking the Lord, I got to a place where that I was not worried about whether I was crying or about the appearance or anything else that was going on around me. Years ago, and Brother Sam will remember this gentleman, I remember a man telling in his testimony that he had a great pride about a hat that he just bought. And he had set it down in the back of the church house. And when he got in trouble with the Lord, he got to seeking God, and his pride got the best of him, and he started worrying about his hat, whether somebody might sit on it or do something like that to it. You see, pride sneaks in many different ways. But let us remember that God hates a proud look. But listen to what he says here. He said, "Wherefore God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble." Now you might say, well, what is being humble? It is the exact opposite of being proud. It is a state in which that you get to, and I should have given you a better definition of this, but it is a state in which that you put aside all of your cares and you put yourself in the place that you need to be. The words that James writes in the seventh verse begins to make it clear. He said, submit yourself, therefore, to God. As we start to look at these verses here today and thinking about the pride that we have, the pride says, I can do it. The pride says that I will take care of this matter myself. My pride will say, I can get saved on my own terms. But he says here, submit yourselves to God is what he tells them to do. Submit is something that really and truly most people really do not want to do. They don't want to submit themselves. They don't want to say that someone else is better than them or stronger than them. When I played football, I had enough sense to realize that Big Stymie Kemp, who was twice my size and twice as fast as I was, could bowl me over in that way. But when I lined up against him, my pride said, you're going to put everything into that you possibly can and just go at him as hard as you can. I got knocked flat on my back is what happened. But the thing about it was, there comes a time that you submit yourself to God instead. You see, what God is trying to do is trying to get you to a place where that you can humble yourself. God hates that proud look because he wants you to allow him to have control of you. He wants you to allow him to give you what you need. He wants you to allow him to get you to a place where that you'll submit unto him. What he says here, he said, God giveth more grace to that humble one. Grace, as it's said so many times, is an unmerited favor of God. In other words, when you humble yourself before the Lord, what he's going to do in that moment in time is he's going to give it to you whether you deserve it or not. You see, in our pride, it says, I. It says in your humbleness, it says, God, you do it. And that is why that God resists that proud look. Now, let's go back to our reading lesson there in the sixth chapter of Proverbs and try to move right along once again. The second thing that is said is a lying tongue. Does anybody in here ever tell a lie? I ain't got no hand showing. The idea that I want you to get, though, we're talking about spiritual sin today. One of the biggest things that we do, it ties right in with the pride, and I mentioned it just a few minutes ago about myself. And the thing that I want you to realize, many times we lie, not to other people. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we lie to ourselves, and then there's times we just flat out lie to God. Have you ever lied to the Lord? Oh, yes, I have lied to the Lord a few times, even in times when that I should be repentant of my sin. You know what I would do? I'd say, Lord, I'm not guilty. One of the things that we tend to do as sinners in the sight of God is to claim we're not guilty of anything that he should hate. You see, God hates that kind of a lying tongue out of a sinner. That lying tongue basically becomes an idea within themselves that we are going to say that we are not what God has told us. The Bible has told us all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And what that means, all of us are sinners. We're all of us have sinned. And because of that, we needed someone to help us in that day. Because that we have lied about our sin unto the Lord. It goes back to that humbleness part of that. Now, going on to the next one, I want to bring this out in this way. The third one that is brought out here is that you shed innocent blood. Now the idea is most people would say, well, I didn't ever kill nobody. I didn't do anything like that. And in the natural sense, what the Bible says, if you've imagined it in your heart, you have the same as committed the sin. That's what the Bible tells us. But the fact of the matter here is we're talking about a spiritual sin. And you're probably looking at me today and you're probably saying, well, I haven't committed any spiritual sins that I can think of. I didn't do anything that as far as causing someone to die. I'm going to beg to differ with you today. Every one of us had to have a price paid for us. Now, the Bible tells us over in the book of Hebrews that it is without the shedding of blood, there is no remission or no putting away of sin. That's what the Bible said. Without the shedding of blood. The Bible tells us that the blood is the evidence of life in this world. Our blood, when it is brought forth out of the body, it causes the life to go out of it. Now, what the scripture says here, that God hates those that shed innocent blood. Now, I want you to look with me, if you would, into the 9th chapter of Hebrews, and the 14th verse is where I'm going here. And what he says, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God. Whoa, wait a minute. He was without spot. That means he was innocent. But Jesus offered his blood for us is what he did. And he said, he purged our conscience from dead works and the serving of a living God. Go over to the next chapter in the 10th chapter and verse 29 and take a look at this verse here. He says, of how much sore punishment suppose ye shall be thought worthy who have trodden underfoot the Son of God. Wait a minute. Sinner, did you realize by your not trusting in the Lord for your soul that you're trodden and walking on him? Sounds a little harsh and out of my mouth, doesn't it, that way? But what Paul says right here, he said, you thought him worthy. He said, let me go back and read it again. Oh, how much sore punch suppose ye shall be thought worthy who have trodden underfoot the Son of God and have counted the blood of his covenant. That's the blood that he gave for your sin, that the wherewith he was sanctified and a holy thing, and have despite unto the Spirit of grace. In other words, because of your sin, because of your failure to trust in the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, I'm telling you today, according to the scripture, you have helped kill God's Son. No, I wasn't there when that Jesus was nailed to the cross. I didn't drive the nails, no. But I was the same as the one that did it, because he went there for me. You see, Jesus gave his life, his life's blood, that you might be saved. And because of that, because of his actions, you can be saved. And so by that coming about into that way, you start to realize you're not only guilty of your sin, but you're guilty of the blood of Christ. It was for you that he died. I hope you see that today, is in this message today, that you are guilty of these sins, these things that God hates today. Now, moving right along, going back to Proverbs once again, and what he says, the next thing, a heart that devises wicked imagination, feet that are swift in running to mischief. Now, I'm going to tie these two together here today, but you might say mischief, and maybe our people today do not use the word mischief so much, but what it means is to get in trouble. Webster's dictionary, he said it in this way. It is I lost that part. Never mind. It is the fact of getting in trouble. You causing harm is what you're doing here with this. And what he says in the 52nd chapter of the book of Psalms, in verse 1, I'm going to give you a couple of verses. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief? In other words, in the harm that you are bringing about. Now, in this today, I want you to understand what the scripture is talking about with your wicked imaginations. The fact that you think, you imagine within yourself that I can save myself. I can get saved by this action or by joining a church or by doing these things. These things all come to you in your imagination. Some would say, well, the devil puts them in there. I'm not going to argue with you. But you're the one that acts upon your imagination. You're the one that hangs on to your imagination in that way. And what he said, why boastest thyself in thy mischief, these things that you're bringing harm to either yourself or to God in this day. I want you to understand today that whenever that an individual does not trust in the Lord, that harms him. It harms God. You might say, well, he's an all-powerful God. How can something so little as that, how can that harm something so great as God? The same way it harms us when someone disbelieves us. It hurts our feelings. It causes us harm in our soul. If you tell somebody a story and you just flat out, they've told it to you for the truth, and you turn around and they tell you that's just a lie, you know what it'll do? It'll hurt our feelings every time. He says, the tongue deviseth mischief like a sharp razor, working deceitfully. You see, the tongue of a man, the thoughts of the man, they are working inside of him. And it's working this deceit that God hates inside of us. And what he goes on to say, thou lovest evil more than good. You see, we as sinners, when we were sinners in the sight of God, we liked being a sinner. Jesus told Nicodemus, he said, they that come to the light will hate the darkness. But they that are in darkness will love the darkness and hate the light. Why? Because it reveals their sin is what it does. You'll find that in the third chapter of John. but what he says, thou lovest evil more than good. In other words, you like that condition you're in, but the ways of this is death. I want you to get that. You love this darkness. You love this evil more than good, and lying rather than speaking righteousness. Thou lovest all words, O thou deceitful tongue. Now, we're going to move right along into the next one here because it ties together here. And what it says in the 19th verse, the fifth thing that God hates is a lying tongue. As I said, how many of us has lied? I think we could, every one of us got a little finger going up somewhere. If we don't, we're lying to ourselves. But here he says, a false witness that speaketh lies is the fifth one. Now, if you say false, what is false? It's something that's not true, right? You know, you get the test in school, either true or false, it's either true or it's false. And so false is something that's not true. A witness is something serving as evidence of proof. Now, you see, the thing that I want to try to bring to you today, as you're looking at being a false witness in this way, let's go to the 28th chapter of the book of Proverbs for just a second. I've got one verse here for you. But listen to the words of Solomon here in this 28th chapter. He said, he that covereth his sins shall not prosper, but whosoever confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy. Notice he says cover. What do you do when you get caught doing something and you have lied about doing it? You tried to cover it up. Use my wife's example. She did something one day this week at work, just a little bitty minor thing. And in the messages from the lady that takes care of things, there was a problem. And she had done, and what it was, she fed the cat some food that it didn't need to get. She said it wasn't that much. Shouldn't have done that much. And she said, well, I'll text Amanda and tell her I was the one that done it. I said, you're going to confess it, huh? She said, yeah, I might as well. It'd been easier for her just forgot about it, not done it. But what does a sinner do with their sin? They lie to themselves. Have you noticed that a lot of these things, they run together, don't they? The lying tongues, the false witness, and the pride, it all comes back to you all putting it, you're trying to cover up your sin that you have. You know it within yourself, don't you? You know within yourself that you are not right with God, but you can say, well, I'll go home today, it'll be okay. Are you sure? You just lied to yourself. A false witness, he says here in this verse, he that covereth his sin shall not prosper, but whosoever confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy. That false witness, you saying, I'm not, I didn't, I wouldn't, I couldn't. These are false witnesses within yourself that you're saying. And I want you to understand something. God hates that today. He wants you to come to him, just like I told you out of in the book of James, submitting yourself to him. Submitting yourself to him that he might save your soul. He's not going to take you as being one that was as one that it thinks themselves better than what they are. He's not going to take one that's lying to themselves. He's not going to take one that's going to say, I'm not claiming the blood of Christ. He says, I'm not taking that one that has that wicked imagination, thinking that they can get by on what they've got and be okay. He's not going to take that. Now you're going to look at me and say, how are you going to get this lasting in there? He that soweth discord. Now, sowing is like you spread seeds out, right? That's sowing. You know, one of the definitions I found of sowing, it is to also set in motion. I thought, how'd that get in there? I've never seen that. That must be an old definition. You set things in motion by sowing. In a sense, you do. When you sow seed into the ground, you put it in motion. It goes flying through the air. It hits the ground. Maybe the ground, it sinks down into the ground just enough to where that when the moisture comes, that's a motion. The moisture comes and it becomes a plant and it grows, and it grows up to be something needful in your life. So it starts in motion. But discord is a lack of agreement and harmony. But as a verb, it means just to disagree. That's what discord is. It means to disagree. You see, in your heart today, one of the things that God hates is the very fact that is that you're setting in motion that you disagree with Him. You say, well, I'm not disagreeing with God. By you not coming and seeking God, you know what it does? That tells Him you disagree that He loves you. You disagree with Him. No, I think He loves me. But do you really love Him? Do you really love Him enough that you would submit to Him, that you turn loose of the pride that you have, that you'll turn loose of all of that wickedness that you have, that you'll quit listening to the devil that's telling you, no, you can get saved some other way. Maybe he's telling you, you can get saved some other time. Maybe it's a more convenient time. You know, one of the other things he's telling you, you got plenty of time. Are you sure? Are you really sure? When I was young, and most of you heard me say this before, I was playing in the creek one day and I saw my brother, 17-year-old, walk out of the house, down the steps, got in the car, and I never saw him alive again. I was on my way home from work one day. Ambulance passed us. We got on up there a little ways, and right there in the middle of Pleasant Shade, not a big place, but ambulances, police cars, a little 5-year-old boy ran out into the road in front of a car. Are you sure? Are you sure? You see, what I'm trying to tell you is God hates what you're doing right now. He is. He's hating the fact that you're not believing in Him. It harms Him. It hurts Him. He said, I gave my son for you. He died for you. He gave His blood for you. And you won't trust Him? You're disagreeing with Him? You know something else? There's somebody else watching you that's also a sinner like you? You know how many times I've watched people, and I'll be honest with you, I was the same way. I'd sit in the church house, preachers give an altar call, I'd look and see if so-and-so was going first. They're watching you. And if you don't trust God, if you don't go to Him, you're causing them not to go too. Does that sound harsh? Facts. These are the things that God hates today. Brother Sam, while we stand and sing, we'll give an invitation to those that are here today, that if you're in this state, you're right here where these people are, these sins that I'm talking about, that God hates. If you're right there at them, you need to turn away from them. You need to submit yourselves to God right now. And you can do it right now. You're just going to have to drop your pride. You're going to have to quit lying to yourself. And you're going to have to claim the blood of Christ while we stand and sing.
223. 223.